Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome. Good morning. It was a little bit cold this morning, but it's warming up. We have, of course, my very good friend Jonathan Mock in the studio. How are you today, Jonathan?
Oh, I can't believe this weather. Is it winter? I mean, we haven't really had a really bad cold snap. We had, I think, two months ago, we had that rain on Shabbos.
Yes.
But this is one of the brochas of living in Johannesburg, is we have this magnificent weather throughout the year. And you often ask a question to your listeners. And from last week, we spoke about black cat peanut butter. So I want to ask, and I think there are some people that might know this answer. What school in Johannesburg banned black cat peanut butter? What was the name of the headmistress? And thirdly, what was the reason for banning the black cat peanut butter? And we should have a little prize for this, because maybe, I was thinking, if you agree, and we haven't discussed this yet, but if someone can get those three questions out, maybe we'll give them a prize of asking them to come into the studio for 10, 15 minutes and speak about that issue, and also what Jewish life was like at that school in those years. I'll give you a clue. It was in the early 1970s.
Yes. Okay. I know what school it was, but and I also know who the headmistress was as well.
We'll talk
very, very famous person.
Yes. So let's see where we go today. You know, we're on the 3 weeks.
Yes.
Perhaps let's start off by, I know you're going to mention Rosh Chodesh, which is on
Monday.
Sunday, not Monday. But maybe let's set the theme is, how do you understand these 3 weeks?
Now, first of all, tomorrow is Shabbat Mavorechim, where we bench Rosh Chodesh. And, of course, it's going to be Rosh Chodesh Av. So we're going to the 9 days of, which will terminate on Tisha B'Av, which will be on the Tuesday of the following week. And, of course, during these 9 days, there are a lot of restrictions. For example, we don't eat meat during the 9 days, except on a Shabbat.
Yeah.
By the way, I must mention something. A lot of people get this wrong. You can drink whiskey during the 9 days. A lot of people say, during the 9 days you don't have any wine, because wine is brandy is made from grapes.
Yes.
But whiskey is made from either rye or from potatoes.
Mm.
So
mm.
you can drink whiskey. A lot of people don't understand that. Also, there's the prohibition as well of not shaving, not having a haircut, and also not buying new clothes. And if you have got new clothes, not wearing the new clothes, which you can't say the Brucha Shechionu on new clothes.
In fact, we're moving from Observatory to Glen Hazel soon, and a number of senior people said, please do not move in the three weeks, especially those 9 days. And I know some people don't even travel in those 9 days. And some people don't have a proper shower or bath.
They
do the minimum. They don't even wash their hair.
Yes.
So it's a mourning period. So if you think of Shiva after the burial, you sit Shiva. This is what we actually, as a nation, as I understand it, we're sitting Shiva. It's like a yahrzeit, but it's extended for 9 days. And it's not just not eating meat. We need to reflect on why are we doing that. And it's really to go back memory. Reflections of the distance past of the Beis HaMikdash, the temple being destroyed.
Yes, and also there's no washing allowed as well.
Washing of clothes. Yes.
Or you say you must have clothes prepared beforehand.
Yes.
For, you know, because on a Shabbos, it's customary to wear a clean white shirt, etc. So have one or two ready for next week, because if you have a shirt today and you want to wash it on Friday and Monday, you can't. It's already in the 9 days.
Yes. So I would like to suggest, because, you know, I'm into this whole mindfulness story now, Ed, that you can use these 9 days to be very mindful that it's not just you don't wash your hair or you don't buy new clothes. We try to be reflective and mindful and why we're doing it. And that increases, I would say, identity as Jewish people.
Yes.
To recognize that that our tragedies just didn't start at the Holocaust, because I'm noticing more and more people, especially in America, or the history almost began with the Holocaust. Right. But our Holocausts have go back thousands of years.
Right.
The destruction of the two temples were Holocausts. What the Romans did to us was Holocaust.
Holocaust. You know. And you know, it's mentioned in the Torah when the children of Israel came out of Egypt in the wilderness, and they complained against Hashem, and they cried, etc. And Hashem, I'll give you something to really cry about. And that was the destruction of the temple.
Yes, yes.
And but you know also, how many of our listeners know what when the Second World War broke out in 1939, you know that was on Tisha B'Av. That was when the Nazis invaded Poland.
And when did the first rocket land on the moon?
Also
on Tisha B'Av. The eagle has landed. The eagle was Germany. It was Germany. The symbol of Germany.
There was a famous movie called The Eagle Has Landed.
Mm.
And you know what it was about?
No.
It was about they were going to try assassinate Winston Churchill. And they sent someone into England in that those. But you know what the British did? They found an actor who was an exact replica, who looked like Winston Churchill.
Oh, yes.
And who spoke like Winston Churchill.
Wow.
So, and this man really sacrificed, he was going to sacrifice his life because they could have assassinated him thinking he was the real Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And so wherever the real Churchill was, they had this gentleman there as well, so that people wouldn't know the difference between the two.
I saw a fun YouTube a few years ago where there was a Barack Obama lookalike, and he was an entertainer, and he looked very much like him, and of course he was trained in how Barack Obama speaks. But I want to just go back to this Rosh Chodesh, because a remarkable thing happened on Sunday at, believe it or not, about 7 minutes past four in the afternoon. You know, Huddle Park, which is just few minutes ago, has developed these walking trails and dog trails. And I got there at 7 minutes past four, and my radio was on. And it was on Chai FM. And I think it was David Adler, if I'm correct.
Nachaim Adler,
who was Avini Malkeinu.
Yes.
With the Tachnun. So what was remarkable was... it was so beautiful, that piece, that I closed my windows and I put the volume on high and I closed my eyes and I was there at Huddle Park and I said, this is my tachnun for the day. And why that links up is when we say we bench Rosh Chodesh, there is a beautiful Yehi Ratzon, which is after the laning.
Yes.
Of we read the Torah, and before we put it back in the Rona Kodesh, there's a Yehi Ratzon.
Right.
So there must be the Chazonim, they love that.
They love that.
Yeah. Which is your favorite...
why on this coming Sunday,
yes,
I'm going to play,
yes,
Bera Lachagi,
yes,
singing Misha Osa Nisim, you know, when you bench Rosh Chodesh, yes, to bless the whole congregation.
Yes.
Now, this is the most unique recording ever made.
What?
You will listen to it. It is so, you must not miss this recording. It was made in 1920.
Yes.
And Bela Chagu was all but 18 years old.
Mm.
He made his debut at the Carnegie Hall to an audience of a couple of thousand.
Mm.
He sang this. He got the standing ovation for more than a half an hour. It was unbelievable.
Let's go back to this. He was 18.
18 years old.
1920.
1920.
In the Carnegie. They didn't have all the fancy technology that we have now.
But you must listen. But this
and what was his...
Sing, Mishi Osa Nisim.
He sang that.
He sang that.
At 18 and got a standing ovation. At 19, 20 and got a standing ovation for half an hour.
Yeah. And
you got a recording.
I've got a recording. But
that's going to be on the Sunday.
It's since been digitalized. You have to take out the sound. But you must listen to this.
What time are you? Where on your
4
list?
O'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, but four,
it's the very first one I'm playing.
That's beautiful.
And it is absolutely superb. And he's got a falsetto that nobody can
actually... What's a falsetto?
To take these high notes.
Oh, see. Okay.
You've never heard a recording like this, Misha Osa Nisim. Many Chazonim have tried to emulate it, copy it. You can't.
He has a unique voice.
unique. And Chagi, then, of course, was such a wonderful cousin that he was offered a position here in Johannesburg by a very well-known gentleman who owned a bottle store in Johannesburg, who was then the chairman of the Beth HaMidrash Gadol, and his name was Solly Kramer.
Well, Solly Kramer.
Right.
Did he sell a lot of whiskey during the 9 days?
We'll come back to the moment. We've got to take an ad break, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Okay.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Well, I'm talking to Jonathan Mark, Dr. Mark. We're discussing all about Tisha B'Av, the 9 days, and before we took a break, I was telling you all about, can you remember?
He
was brought to South Africa by, as I said, Solly Kramer, who owned that famous Solly Kramer bottle store, I'm sure many of you remember, in the bottom of Louis Botha Avenue. Mm-hmm. And he was here from the 1930s. He left in 1949, went back to America, went to the Temple Israel. It was the Orthodox, although it is called Temple Israel, Orthodox Synagogue. He's a world-famous chazan. By the way, now his Chagi's son married the late Rabbi Yitzhak Kosofsky's daughter, because Rabbi Yitzhak Kosofsky was the Rav of the Beth HaMidrash HaGadol in Dorfentin, but the shul was known as the Berel HaChagi Shul. Now, it was such a popular shul, you couldn't get a seat there because of Chagi. But
on a Friday night.
Shabbat Chagi only davened once a month. He only davened on Rosh Chodesh, when it was a Shabbos to bench Rosh Chodesh.
Yes.
Shabbos Mevchorechim.
He would only do that. He wouldn't daven Musaf.
No, and he would do weddings if there was necessary, you know, but he wouldn't do daven during the week. Or
what was he by trade then?
And he was trained as a chazan. And he only davened on a Yom Tovim and on special occasions. But that was, he was so a wonderful chazan. And then he went back to America, and as I said, he was a world international chazan. And when he passed away, he was succeeded by the famous chazan Moshe Kosovitsky. I'm sure many of you heard of him. There were four brothers. There was Jacob, there was Moshe, there's David, and Simcha. Simcha Kosovitsky came to South Africa. I know we're talking chazonis, but this is history. He was the first chazan when they built the new Parkview Greenside Shul in the 1930s, and he came out in the 1940s, and there was a problem between the two wives, the chazan's wife and the rabbi's wife. I'm not going to go into those details.
Oh, come on. A little bit, yeah.
Well, I can tell you it. I'll tell you about it, okay?
Was it a machloikas of an issue or personality clash? Just in broad terms, personality clash.
No, I'll tell you about it in a moment. And then Simcha Kosovitsky went to Cape Town to the Skunda Street Shul, where he was there for 37 years. Now, I'll tell you what the argument was.
Yes. You know, it's not Rosh Hashanah. It's okay.
The argument was as follows. It wasn't an argument even. You know, on a Rosh Hashanah night, all the ladies come to shul and they got new outfits. Everybody's got a new outfit. They've been to the dressmaker, wherever you buy it. Now, the rabbi's wife, I'm sure many of you remember the rabbi. I'm not talking Rosh Hashanah. It was Rabbi Lou, Morris Lou. I'm sure you remember him. And she went to have a new outfit made, and she went to this dressmaker. And by the way, the dressmaker, she was the grandmother of Rabbi Gerson, of the you know, rabbi from the Pine Street Shul.
Pine Street, yeah.
She had a dressmaking shop there in Ilov Street. And this Mrs. Lou, Rabbi Robertson Lou, came along and said, look, I'm from the Parkview Greenside Hebrew Congregation. Can you make me an outfit? Certainly, she made an outfit. A couple of days later, comes along Mrs. Simcha's wife, Kosovitsky, And she said, look, I'm from the Greenside Hebrew congregation. Can you make me an outfit? Well, she didn't put two and two together. One said Parkview Greenside. The other one said Greenside, you know. So she thought it's two separate congregations. So she made her Osran outfit.
Exact same thing.
Yes, well, yes. Lo and behold, comes Rosh Hashanah evening, and the two ladies walk in, and both wearing the same outfits.
Oh, my goodness.
So can you imagine what went on? Two ladies, you can't believe it. You know, you can't be seeing somebody else's wedding what you're wearing, and especially made for you. You know, it's not that you go into a retail store and you can buy it off the rack. Mm. This was made. And that led to an argument. So the Rebbetzin and the Chazanta, by the way, that is the wife of a chazanta. They didn't speak to each other. And so Rabbi Chazan Kusovitsky was offered a position. They left a position in Cape Town. Now, let me just tell you about...
Because of the dress.
Because of the dress, that was the argument.
Probably a spark. But you know what? At Oxford Shulet once happened, and Rosh Hashanah, you know, also this whole thing of dressing up. And two women, it wasn't the rabbi and the Rebbetzin and the Chazanta. It was just two women. They sat together upstairs, you know, Oxford Shulet. And they were exactly the same dress. But what actually resolved that one woman left... And she went home and changed. It was solved very quickly, of course.
Yeah, but I'm just saying this.
But there must have been something deeper, which we weren't going to.
But that's what happened.
Because it wasn't there for... it was the dressmaker in a way.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Simcha Kusovitsky. Now, Simcha Kusovitsky, of the four brothers, was the most musical of all. So when Bela Chagi passed away, they offered him the position in America. But he said, no, give it to my brother, Moshe Kusovitsky. Mm, mm. And I don't know if any of you have heard Moshe Kusovitsky. He's an absolute outstanding cousin. And I can tell you now, I've had the good fortune to hear all four brothers sing at the Royal Albert Hall in London in 1900, and I think it was 54, 55. Mm, mm. And present in the audience was the mother of the four Chazonim.
Wow.
It was an absolute unbelievable...
Was it what they call a quartet?
Yeah, a quartet.
Just the four of them? Or
the four brothers.
The Royal Albert, and they had a whole program, or just one or two?
No, they had a whole program. Now, if you've heard Moshe Kusovitsky, and you've heard David Kusovitsky, and you have heard Simcha Kusovitsky, and Jacob, unfortunately, the oldest one, never made any recordings for some reason or other. But to hear the four of them was, and you must hear them. And as a matter of fact, Isaac,
the beauty of the story is that the mother was in the audience.
The mother was in the audience.
And these boys don't just get up, you know, and decide to sing. I think this mother and maybe the father, I don't know how much you mind, probably they learned to sing from the day they were born.
Well, correct.
There was a lot of music in the house, and they sang a lot, and they were encouraged. Because a lot of people have the potential, but they're not encouraged at home to sing.
Right, I must tell you, each of them has got their most magnificent voice. As a matter of fact, I will, not this week, the following week, I will play Moshe Kusovitsky's a cover of Ben Hamahalal. And you refer to Chaim Adler. That, by the way, from the Tachnun, it's called... Where do you think it? What section of Tachnun does it go?
The Rode in the Avinim Akenu.
Yes, but where is it?
Mitzratzai
Berachamim. Mm. And then you say the Avinim Akenu.
It's right at the end of the Tachnun.
Right at the end of the Tachnun.
Because a lot of congregations, they do, especially on Rosh Hashanah. And Avinu Malkenu.
I just want to tell you another story.
I wouldn't get to the role
when
at all.
I'm going to tell you another story, but without mentioning names. About where rabbis' wives and chazantas, etc. But this is another one. This is between two rabbis' wives. Now, the rabbi's wife was the, what they call, the president of the ladies' guild. Of the shul, you know.
Like the brokers.
And there was another rabbi's wife who also was in charge of the catering at the shul. So it came one Shabbos morning, and they both walked in, and the tables were laid, and there was a big argument. What was the argument about? Over the color of the serviettes on the table. It was one of the big shuls. I'll mention the shul, but I'll mention, I'm not thinking the names. It was the Emerentia Hebrew congregation. There was an enormous argument because the rabbi, the president of the Ladies' Guild, didn't like the color blue, and the other one used the color blue. There was a big argument. And
are you serious?
I'm very serious about this. I'm very serious about this.
There was an argument because of the color blue.
The color of, and there was an absolute altercation at the brocha.
No, once again, it was just a spark. There must have been a big tension. But remember, you told me a few months ago how the Sephardic shul split because of the chopped herring.
Because of the chopped herring. The lady, the Sephardi gentleman married an Ashkenazi lady,
yeah,
and she didn't know anything about Sephardi culinary, and she made chopped herring to break the fast. And the Sephardi don't eat chopped herring and kichel. And they have barukas and all the...
They see the strafe.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there was a big argument, and that split the community.
So far, three things today. One was the machlokas over dress, which is exactly the same. Another one over serious because of the color blue. And we brought up what we brought up because of the chopped herring.
Right.
In these 3 weeks, there is a sensitivity of machlokas, of arguments. And in England, you probably know, please God, it's been settled with that story with the rabbi. But they say that the second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, was destroyed.
Because of sin asricham.
And that means?
Baseless hatred.
Come on, a dress, wearing the same dress. Make a joke of it. Say we identical twins. the serviettes. You know, the kichel. You know, okay. Don't walk out. Just say next time, don't do it. Don't eat it. but it's interesting what fights come up from. But once again, from a psychiatric point of view, it's usually just a spark or a lot of underlying tension. It was, how did the First World War break out? It was a shot.
Correct.
But because there was so much tension going on, it wasn't a shot. It was just lit the powder keg.
Right. We're going to take an ad break, and we'll come back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. If you just tuned in, we're talking all about sinat chinam, baseless hatred.
Yeah.
Or, you know, talking out of turn. But just to remind you that Shabbat comes in this evening at 5:18. Motzei Shabbat at 6:10 p.m. It's a double parsha, Matot Masay, and it's Shabbat Mevorachim, because on Monday will be Rosh Chodesh Av, and then we go into the 9 days, and we terminate the following Tuesday with Tisha B'Av, which is a 24-hour fast, and there's quite a lot of restrictions. We did mention them earlier, but I suggest you contact your rabbi. I'm sure the shul will be able to give you more information. Now, we're talking all about Sinat Chinam, and I also want to mention, you know, there were other instances that took place in shuls, petty instances, like, for example, I mentioned the color of serviettes or the woman dressing the same, because it became like a fashion parade, and you looked upstairs in the gallery, and every lady would be seen having a different outfit. And as you said, there must be something that causes this.
Yeah. This baseless hatred is a very complicated story, and you know, it's so easy to say not to have it, but you know, you build up. People can be abusive. People can make you angry. They disappoint. They don't deliver. We talk about in the shuls, but there is also in the homes and in businesses and business partners, and they can also build up. You know, it's a failing, but it's also a human challenge. And the one way to see it is just to be aware in a way of what's happening right now and to let go. And if I can just move a little bit into some biological psychiatry, the latest. Kind of, not the latest, but it's confirmed that we've got two networks in our brain, and one is the narrative. And that narrative is our story. It's me, I, mine, and it's the past and the future. And that's where we hold our revenge and we hold our angers. But there's also another network of the experiential, what is happening right now. And that's the antidote to it, is because many of us get caught up in the paralysis of narrative and the past and thinking. And the way to break it is just to be present here now. And that is a to me, the only way one can really break it is if I was one of those women or their husbands, say, come on, let's make a joke of it. Let's don't make it into the serviette story, the chopped herring, the millions of other things that we fight over. But if you've got a bigger perspective, that the only moment we've got is now. So this is one of the things that they do often in training, is imagine you're at your funeral, and what would you like people to say? So a lot of my group say, everybody lies at the funeral. You know, but let's say the truth is, and one of the things is that you know when people do spoke about that revenge I held for so many years. I once had sisters, two sisters. They had an argument in their teens, and for 56 years, they did not speak to each other. And I was part of it. They were in their 70s now, where they made up. And I said, and they were crying from the depths of the heart. They had wasted 56 years over a small, petty issue. And we have to be very careful, you know, choose battles very carefully. And most of the stuff is rubbish. It's serviettes, dresses, kichel, or chopped herring. There are certain things that we must stand for. And but this, we're talking about baseless hatred and led to the calamity of the second base, I mean, just being destroyed. Baseless means it's petty.
Petty.
And we have to find a way on how to let go, move on, and not live in this narrative of the past or what should have been, and this one did that, and you got the needle. It was a nice 1967. I've got the needle to that person. Let go. We've only got the moment. Make the most of it for the present.
You know, you talk about these two sisters who didn't talk for 56 years. I have a close friend whose sister lives overseas, and he hasn't spoken to her for 40 years. Baseless over a petty item. I'm not going to go into the detail, but for 40 years he hasn't spoken to her, and you know, it grieves him. It absolutely hurts him. And they came from a very close knit family, but some petty little thing sparked it. And for 40 years, he's never heard or spoken to.
Yeah, in one of the suburbs I lived in, they used to deliver newspapers. They still do, but it's very rare now. Yeah. And then this one house that delivered, I think it was the Star newspaper, too. So I made inquiries, of course. You know, I'm a nosy person. What's going on here? Two sisters don't speak to each other. Won't even share the newspaper. So the one, I mean, we, you know, one said there's so many other things in the world to worry about, but it's a personality thing that people can take something and they're punishing that person through this what we call silent treatment, which is to me very infantile and actually hurts the person more than the other.
Right. Tabo, who's training for us today, because Craig unfortunately is not well, and we wish him well.
Yes.
Have you ever had any experiences like this where families, brothers, sisters don't talk to each other?
Yeah, Isaac, I think it happens now that you guys are, I mean, the story of the newspaper is just the worst one that I've ever had. But, you know, I think if you and your sibling, you spend like a week not talking to each other over something, I don't care how big or small it is. If you spend more than a week, it then becomes a routine, because of now, if you take it to another week and another week, you end up getting used to it, and then you don't see the need to talk to him. And then at the end of the day, it then becomes, I will see who's going to come to who first.
Yes.
And then that's what is going to drive you to not speaking to each other for 40 years because of you waiting for that moment that I'm not going to go to Isaac. Isaac is saying I'm not going to go to Tabo. Mm. And then for 40 years, we're not going to speak to each other. Worst part, we see each other every day. We stay in one house.
Tabo, you're spot on. You know, it's like who's going to blink first? And you know, it comes a tremendous loss. You know, it's so petty. But, it's common. It is common. Who's going to blink first? And, Yeah.
So. I when I was in
this is a universal
Haida, in Jepi Haida, we had a family with two brothers living in the same house with their parents, never spoke to each other for years and years. When the one brother got married, the other one didn't go to his wedding, and the other one didn't go to the other one's wedding. I couldn't, you know, and unfortunately, and they both passed away since, and the one, when the one passed away, he didn't go to his brother's funeral. So, you know, it's so petty. It's so ridiculous.
And if you go down to the problem and then you try to find what is it that started the whole thing, you might find that there was just one piece of meat left and then the other took without considering the other one that, you know.
Mm. And you know,
it's the small thing.
I've done many funerals and I've had
at West Park Cemetery
where you have a brother and a sister coming to bury a parent. And they don't talk to each other. And then when it comes to announcing the prayers, or, you know, for Minchamara, for Shiva house, they have two separate ones, one at the brother's house and one at the sister's house. So you don't know which one to go to. I mean, this is how petty it is. Mm. They were at the same parents. That's your parents you're burying, and they don't talk to each other.
Yeah, you see, one of the solutions is that what we call DMCs, deep meaningful conversations, and deep meaningful conversations is not what we're talking about. It involves deep emotions, because that newspaper story or the meat story or whatever you want to call it, it goes back a long way, and because they avoided the pain of saying that, look, you hurt me there or whatever. And it builds up and builds up to this one issue, which is the tip of the iceberg. So there's something much more deeper, but people are afraid to what I call encounter reality, which is sometimes you have to have a deep, meaningful conversation and say, look, what you did hurt me or whatever. Let's talk it out. Let me get your perspective. And most of us run away from it. We don't want to face it, but it comes with a price, because it builds up and it builds up. And then there's a newspaper story that is just the spark. And, it's not just that it just happens like that. There's usually a long history.
There's always called it greatness is humility. Small is big.
Mm.
You know, if you do something, one small little act, you just go and apologize. You're big. That's what it is. Mm. But as you said, this one doesn't want to do it, and that one doesn't want to do it. And then
because you see, there's this infantile approach that if you say sorry, I'm perceived as weaker. But when you say apologize and say, you know what, come on, I'm at fault, you can, whatever, let's move on. Because you know what, ultimately life is about relationships. That is the essence of life, is relationships. And there's three types of relation directions. One is inwards with yourself, outwards with friends, and upwards with Hashem. And if you work on all three of those, you become a much more stable person. But if you start to break relationships on pettiness, you actually diminish yourself. You diminish your experience of what life is all about. You diminish your humanity.
Yes. You see, you've got to also go above it. If someone says something and you may think it's hurtful and one thing, just go above it, because you don't know. That person may not be thinking rationally at that time or may have said it unintentionally. So just go above it. That's what I say.
Yeah, sometimes humor, you know, humor is useful most of the time. But sometimes that person who's listening is not ready for it, or something's happened. And, you know, you talk about, I asked you many, many months ago how you got such a good memory, and you say you go over each night. What I tend to do is I reflect on each day. And maybe that's why my memory's not so good, but I reflect on maybe that joke, it's enough now, because somebody, that they read it the wrong way, or that maybe I should have listened more, and that's the self-improvement. You can't just get rid of this baseless hatred. That's okay, understand baseless hatred. You have to actually practice it through life. In other words, using your life as your curriculum. Anything in life can teach you. It's not a book. It's life.
It's experience.
It's experience. And that's why the age of paradox, aging, the paradox of aging is to become wise, you have to age. And that's this thousands and thousands of experiences in life.
Right. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So I'm talking to Dr. Jonathan Malfin with Taubo all about Sinat Chinom, baseless hatred.
So let's finish off on a more positive note. Is Isaac, in your experience, who personifies the opposite? I'm sure you'll bring up Rabbi Alloy, but who, like, if you want to say the exact opposite of Sinat Chinam, is this is the model. This is the model we should look up to on how we need to relate.
It's Aaron, the brother of Moshe.
Okay, but in today's time, the people that you've met in your last, so many decades, in your wisdom.
Well, of course, I would say would be Rabbi Alois number one.
And how did he go about it?
Because
He just loved people.
Oh. Another one was Rabbi Rabbi Moshe Feinstein.
Mm.
Another great one was Rabbi Kamenetsky.
Mm.
And I once told you the story about, after a morning davening, he would have sefer in his hand, and he'd walk a few blocks
to the convent.
Past the convent.
Yes.
And he'd greet all the nuns in the convent. They were outside walking in and greeting them. And then for 1 or 2 weeks, after he passed away, one of the mother superior came to the shiva where he was and asked, what has happened to that rabbi?
Mm.
So they asked her why. He says, because he used to greet each and every one of us, and even by our names.
Mm.
He said he was such a gentle soul. He had time to talk to all of us and ask us how we were doing.
Okay, so that's critical. It was all human beings.
It wasn't
us and them. Because I think that is one of the problems here, is that when we put a boundary to say we are us, and how narrow is that boundary, how wide it is. And what you talked about is someone who had no boundary. All human beings were created in the image of God. Because some people say, well, because they're not my religion or my color or my gender or whatever, I can't greet them. Or they're not all my social economics and look down on them. That's when the problem comes. Right. So to me, a major criteria is that you love all human beings.
Everyone is created in the image of God.
Yep.
Right.
Thank you, Rabbi Sachs.
I want to thank Taba for controlling today, to thank Dr. Jonathan Mark for coming to the studio.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Just a reminder that this program is replayed on Sunday just after 9 a.m. And to wish you all a Shabbat Shalom and a Chodesh Tov. And don't forget to listen to the Art of the Cantor on Sunday between 4 and 5, where I'm going to play this magnificent recording by Bera Lachagi, Misha Oso Nisim. Go well, have a wonderful Shabbat, and enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you.